Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2019. Lecture 2, delivered on January 16, 2019. The title of this lecture is Reading Investment Screens.
Today, Reading Investment Screens. As you can see from this screen, we have the S&P 500, the Dow 30, and the NASDAQ. We also have a couple of other things here, which I will ignore for the time being. Now, the S&P 500, you would buy all 500 stocks that are listed as the big top companies of the world in the Standard & Poor's portfolio. You'd buy all 500 of them. And then you would watch their prices day to day as if it were a portfolio of actual physical stocks. Now, the amount of stock of any given company in the portfolio, you would add up the market caps of all of the stocks. And then each stock's market cap would have that weight in your calculation of the portfolio. It's a weighted average. And we'll talk more about that. Don't worry if it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. S&P 500... these are the 500 largest companies in the world, pretty much. Those 500 companies constitute 70% of the value of all the equity in the world. In only 500 companies, you have about 70% of the world's ownership value. The concentration is staggering. That is not a lot of companies that pretty much represent almost three-fourths of the entire world's ownership value. This is, in other words, very close to an ideal portfolio that we call the market portfolio. The market portfolio could never be created. It would be every stock in the world in a portfolio, and each stock would have its weight in the portfolio as it is weighted in the world's economy. But this is... the Standard & Poor's 500 with 70% of the world economy in it, that's a pretty good representation of the world, of that market portfolio that we always like to talk about. Now, the Dow 30 used to call it the Dow Industrials, but it's not industrial anymore. It's now, back in the day, the Dow 30 companies that represent the biggest monsters on Earth, the great big Tyrannosaurus Rexes. Those would be those ginormous industrial giants, oligopolies, and in some cases, almost near monopolies, if you remember that from your economics classes. Now, oddly enough, it used to be the industrials. Those were industrial companies. But as the biggest companies of the world have become more oriented towards service and entertainment, the industrials, the big, huge machines companies and all that, were pushed out of the portfolio, and into it came these more service and entertainment companies. So, for example, it would have... The originators of Dow Jones Company, who started the Dow 30, they would roll over in their graves to see that Disney is now in the Dow 30. Disney. Yeah, that mouse is one of the controllers of the earth, troubling as that might be. Now, the NASDAQ is almost all very small companies. These are the scrappy startups, little companies, companies that have total value of maybe $50, $100 million. But there are huge companies in the NASDAQ, interestingly enough. Microsoft is in there. Amazon's in there. the way you can tell if a company is on the NASDAQ is its trading symbol has four letters. Like MSFT, Microsoft, that's four letters. It's a NASDAQ company. AMZN, that's a NASDAQ company. But you also have, now if it has three or two or one, you're talking about something that's on the New York Stock Exchange or the maybe the AMEX or something like that. Now understand that the S&P 500 and the Dow 30 are not exchanges. They're merely portfolios of stock. But the NASDAQ is an index of an actual exchange. The NASDAQ is all of those companies that are running on the in the NASDAQ system. Now, let me explain something here. NYSE, New York Stock Exchange, that is a physical platform of trading. That's that classic place where you might have seen where all these people are throwing papers and yelling and screaming at each other and saying, buy, buy, sell, sell. That's the New York Stock Exchange. That's NYSE. Amex is the American Stock Exchange is the same way. It's a physical platform. They don't work the same way, and I'll get into that a little later. The NASDAQ is completely different. In my days as a consultant, I traded in the NASDAQ. I got companies listed on the NASDAQ, but there is no physical floor for the NASDAQ. It is and always has been an electronic bulletin board service. In other words, I would work with other brokers, broker-dealers around the country. We would never meet each other. We would never see each other. We just dealt in stocks. Okay, I've got an order for 600 sell on this certain company, and I would go on this electronic screen, and this was back before there was an internet. There was an internet before there was an internet, a long, long ago, back in the dark ages when I was young. But it was an electronic screen, and I'd post, okay, I've got this trading symbol, I've got someone who wants to sell 600. And then other market makers in that particular stock, or maybe some others who were on the screens, would look and see if they had anyone who wanted to buy some stock. Maybe I would be looking to sell 600. You were a market maker who dealt in that stock. You had, say, 200 buy order. I might find 100 buy order from you, and I'd find another 300 from you, and then I could put together the I could clear the order that way. That was how it worked. And it became more and more automated, and now it's just an engine. And interestingly, I do work with international studies for emerging economies in West Africa, the Caribbean, and Central America, and I teach in Central America in the summers. And I find that they have, I mean, they're so proud of their stock. We've got a stock exchange. You do? Yeah. Our stock exchange, and I look at it, okay, that's 42 stocks. Yeah, and what, three have actually had trades in the last 5 or 6 days. Can I see the floor of the exchange? Oh, no, it's electronic. That was something that I didn't really appreciate was even now, many of these third and second world countries, the second world countries, actually emulate the NASDAQ. They don't do the New York Stock Exchange or something or the AMEX. Yeah.
Market makers, do they do just like Class A stocks?
What do you mean by Class A stock?
Like companies, like they issue stock, like before they release it to the public, they have different classes of stock, and like the public generally gets like Class C, so we don't.
No, there's no such thing as that.
Or a C stock.
You got the terms A and B completely wrong. Class A and Class B have to do with control and supermajority voting rights. Now, you're thinking of primary versus secondary markets. These are all secondary market transactions. I guarantee you that. Okay, I want to raise money, so I'm going to sell 1 million shares of my company's stock. I'm glad you brought this up because it'll give me a chance to do this right now before I forget. I want to sell 1 million shares of stock at $20 a share to raise a gross of $20 million before commissions. Now, the way that will work is I will form a set of investment bankers. You'll be the lead investment banker, and then you'll form a syndicate of others, and together you'll allocate that $1 million among you to sell. you will actually pay me my money, $20 million minus whatever, right up front, minus your commissions. And then essentially that was the primary market transaction right there. Now you will probably, if, and I'm going to show you talk a lot about darkness in this world, you guys will probably sell that stock to your best, wealthiest, most powerful clients. Okay, you'll clear your books of it. That would be a secondary market transaction because you bought it. So anything after, I'm out of it. I'm done. I got my money. I go have cheeseburgers at Red Robin. Yeah, I could probably buy one with about that much money. But they do have all you can drink root beer floats, so we're okay with it. But from there, that's a secondary market transaction. Then the fun begins. I start to pump the stock. I get the idiots in the news media. Oh, this company has just gone public, and boy, does it look good. I see good earnings potential. I see a good technology, and the people who are running that company are second to none. They'll do whatever you guys tell them to say because they want access. They want something for news copy. Stock price goes up. Then what you do is you dump it out of the rich people's portfolios onto the suckers like you and you. We'll get it out there to you, and then whatever happens to the price. You know, that's how the game works. You understand it? It's called pump and dump. But after you, and I have sold the stock to you, anything after that is called a secondary market transaction. And everything you see that I'm going to show you here for pretty much the rest of this course is secondary market. It is the market after the stock has already cleared from the company to the first buyers, which would usually be the investment bankers. However, if you're a really tiny company, you're on your own. You're probably not going to find investment bankers. You're going to have to figure out another way to sell your stock. So anyway, that's that part of it. Excuse me. Now, let's talk about a company. Let's look around, see what we can do today. Now, this was an update on the street. An update on the street. That means an update when there is positive sentiment. That is called a bullish day. Okay? Now, I want you to say the word bull. No. Bull. Good. She's good. You're good. Real good. That's a bullish day, and you are bullish on stocks today, okay? Moo. Bull is a cow. Moo. Okay? You are negative on stocks. You see the stock market going down. You're a bear. You can't do it. Just admit it, bro. You can't. Okay. People looking for the exit. All righty then. Okay, so right now, can you tell me, was this a bullish day or a bearish day on the street? Talk to me.
Bull.
Bull, yes. Bullish day. Moo. You can't do that, can you? I knew you couldn't. Okay. Okay, and notice that it was an across-the-board bullish day. There wasn't, sometimes you'll see some indexes go down, some go up. That's a mixed day. You also look at the pattern of the positives. Look here, do you notice one of those indexes that went up more than the others? Talk to me. Which one?
Dow Jones.
Yeah, the Dow, it went up much stronger than the others. So in other words, whatever positive bullish information was going into the stock prices today, it was information that was of more positive value to the largest of the large companies on Earth. It was still beneficial, whatever information there was, or other information, to smaller companies. But clearly there was a bias of this information that made traders think this is very good for the biggest companies on Earth. And remember this also, that the smaller the companies, and when I say small, all right, madam, I want you to tell me a dollar value that is small to you. Some dollar amount, a company size that would be small company. Total revenues, let's say.
1,000?
Well, actually, when I say small, I'm talking about $50 million or less, okay? That's small in our world. When I'm talking, okay, so we have an incredibly difficult situation going on. In the American economy, there's no doubt that it's scary as hell right now. There's more volatility, price volatility right now than I think has ever been there. It's certainly in my lifetime. I've never seen this kind of price volatility. Price volatility represents risk. There is so much risk in the right now. Larger companies, they are much more likely to sustain that kind of risk without as much damage because they are global. So a company that is spanning the entire world, it would take a meteor hitting half the planet to really rattle their cage. I'm being hyperbolic about that. Whereas, so something, the United States screwed up again. Great Britain is now a holy mess because of the vote against Brexit. Those kinds of things would be much more likely to damage the company that is less global. Because the global company, as one about 5 years ago, it's been a little more than I think, I took my finance club students up to Zurich, which is a reinsurer. And it insures huge things and major all over the world. And one of my students during the question and answer got a little cheeky and asked one of the vice presidents, so Zurich was doing reinsurance on the Fukushima reactors, so that must have really caused some problems for Zurich. And the guy said, oh, yeah, but we made a fortune in other parts of the world where they didn't have nuclear reactor meltdowns. So in other words, yes, it's tragic that there was a meltdown and lots of people died and a whole lot of animals are glowing and walking around with five legs now. But at the same time, on a global scale, yeah, I lost there, I won over there, and I won there, and I won there. So what? You see, so that diversification of the exposure to risks makes the companies like the Dow 30 lower risk, and therefore you don't expect as much return because you're not taking as much risk in those kinds of companies. So if you're thinking, I'm going to make me a fortune in the Dow, you're probably not. It's a safe, defensive portfolio. Now let's move on. And by the way, in the last 10 minutes, I've poured, if I'm on my game, 15 new terms at you and probably about 9 new concepts. In 10 minutes. That's how intense it gets in my world. And in yours now that you're my unfortunate victim, or students. So let's look at a stock. Trading symbol TGT. It has 3 letters, so where would what exchange would TGT be on? Sir, what exchange would it be on?
New York Stock Exchange.
Yahtzee. Good. Target. Target for you people from Decatur. I shouldn't do that. I disrespect Decatur, and then someone files a complaint. My mom's from Decatur. Yeah, I know, son. Notice that Target kind of bucked the trend for the day. It lost ground. So within the S&P 500, that doesn't mean that if the S&P 500 goes up, not every stock goes up. Many more go up than go down as far as percentage terms go. But here we have Target. And walking through the numbers, the market is closed, okay? So you're going to hear me use a couple of different terms, so make sure that you know the different terms that I use. The previous close, that would be the close yesterday. Well, actually, that might be today's close. No. Yeah, that was yesterday's close. 67.85 was a settle today. Did you hear I said the word settle today? Settlement, that was the settling. That was the last trade that happened, was at that price. You with me okay? It opened this morning at 68.06. Now, let's walk the market. And that's what I'm doing here. I'm walking the market. You notice that it opened down from where it closed yesterday. This morning, it opened 15 cents lower than it closed yesterday. And then you notice there was a tick and then downward. And then there was this jump. Right there. See that jump right there? Right after the opening bell, there was a boom like that, and then poof. It dropped on the opening, and then all of a sudden, right away, it just wow. Okay, who did that, madam? Who did that?
I'm guessing that there was some maybe after hours.
No, the after hours was what pushed it down. It opened low. So there was more sell than buy on the opening. I'm not even looking for a name of a person. Sir, who made that spike there at the opening bell, just right after the opening bell? Okay, I'm going to give you a hint. Moo.
Bullish.
Good. No, the bulls. No, bullish is an adjective. Bull is a noun. Okay. So, yeah, that was a bull rally, an opening rally. They saw a drop, they saw a bargain, and then they just jumped in and bought on the drop. It's a classic trading play. Okay? But almost right away, the bulls pushed in, bought, demand went up, price went up, just classic economics. This is pure supply and demand dynamics. Buying exceeded selling, the price went up, but then this happened. What was that? Who did that? Who? Good. Bears, not bear. There is not. Okay. Now, there might be one bear. He's a huge, but I mean, usually it's a bunch of smaller bears. That's a bunch of bears growling. Weirdos. Okay, so the bears shoved their way in. They saw the hike, and so they sold on the pop to bring the price down. I'm teaching you terminology. I'm teaching you how to think like an investment person. It helps you learn the material in this class. Knowing the language that we use, knowing the words, the terms, the thinking that we do, helps a lot with doing this class good. Now, we had a haul back up. See the secondary pull by the bulls? They saw the drop and they said, oh, no, you don't. We are going to shove our way back in. That price drop made them feel good, bargain on the stock, so we're going to buy in, push it hard. But then the bears said, oh, no, you don't even dream of that. And they did a hard surge. You see that hard surge mid-morning, pushing it down? That was those bears just selling hard, taking those bulls out and turning them into steaks, ribeyes. Very tender, you know, marbled fat content for flavor and atherosclerosis. And then you notice the level. But then, notice right here. You see these lines down here? These are volume bars. Do you see this volume spike right here? That's kind of unusual because that usually that is a forewarning that something's going to happen. And sure enough, And then you notice that there was a volume spike there. That was the bulls coming back to push the stock price back up. Another volume spike right there. The bear said no. And so it went back and forth. Notice there was heavier volume towards the end of the day. There was much more battle on the stock towards the close. And at the end of the day, it seemed to have had a little bit of a rally there right before the closing bell. But it wasn't much of anything, and it ended on a downstroke. It looks like it ended on a down tick there at the end. So we'll just have to see what happens in the overnight market. Now, the overnight market is not buying and selling the stock. It's buying a kind of derivative on stocks called a futures contract. You can buy, these are highly leveraged bets on the underlying asset. So futures on the S&P 500, their prices will start showing up in a couple of hours. And that is a good way to see what's going to happen the next day. It's like a dark crystal ball, because you'll see the futures action either up or down, the trading on the bets of up or down on the stock the next day. So I think it's probably going to be too early before the futures trade starts showing up here. So that's unfortunate. But anyway, now let's get down to some serious work. Bid and ask. The bid is what you buy the stock for, what you can sell the stock for. The ask is what you can buy the stock for. No, you don't pay this. This was the last bid ask. And on this stock right now, the bid ask spread is 15 cents? Yeah, 15 cents. That's actually a fairly robust spread. That spread is how the brokers make their money. I will buy the stock from you at 67.60. You need to sell? You want to buy some? Well, madam, I'm going to buy it from you at 67. I will sell it to you at 67.80. You'll say, no, wait a minute, you SOB. You bought it from him at 67.60, and you're selling it to me at 67.85, you running capitalist dog. You brute. You creature from the Black Lagoon. And I'll say to you, bite me. You know why? That's how I make my money. That's how I make my living, is off the spread. Bid and ask, that's one of my most common ways to make money, is off the bid-ask spread. That, 15 cents, I don't think that's a lot to ask for being a very cool trader on Wall Street. I got expenses, martinis to buy. The 52-week range is the low and high over the 62 weeks. So talk to me right now. Is this stock near its 52-week low or its 52-week high? Sir, talk to me. Is this stock near its 52-week high or its 52-week low? It's near its low. That's because we are in a bear market. This market is not good, and we're going to see many stocks near their 52-week lows right now. As a matter of fact, as the days go on, we'll see them forming new 52-week lows over the next 6 months.
Why do you think
that is? Say that?
Why do you think
that is? Why do I think what is? Because we're in a bear market. The economy is going to hell in a handbasket. And it's not going to get better. It's going to get a lot worse than where it is now. And the stock and the markets know it. That doesn't mean there won't be up days. Hell, we had an up day today. I mean, there are going to be wonderful. Did you know that in the fourth level of hell, they have very nice, cool, pleasant days? Those happen every 5 or 6 million years, but it happens. Did you know that there are times on Facebook when young women will like what you have said? It won't happen very often, but it'll happen. In fact, there will be times when someone pauses for 1 or 2 seconds at your profile on Tinder. So there will be updates in a bear market. Shut up, people. Overall, the economy is skidding hard. We knew it would. And if you know anyone who I had last semester for this course, I told you what was going to happen. I predicted it day by day. I'm good at this because I've been doing it for a long, long time. Yeah.
What do you think fundamentally is going to make this more darker bull market?
darker barren. Well, for one thing, the government shutdown is going to pretty much send the gross domestic product growth to zero for this quarter. Two consecutive zeros or negatives of economic growth is a recession. That's technically a recession. We artificially created one. We would have had the recession start in about 6 months, except that this shutdown is going to accelerate that process. The other factors that are going into it now is just that there is so much political uncertainty, especially in the United States and Great Britain, and there are also some very serious concerns in Western Europe for safety of the democracies. Everyone's scared to death. It's coming. Plus, we have some more significant matters concerning a lot of companies are now taking very seriously the economic costs are going to be associated with climate change. It's not a political issue. It's not some philosophical thing. Companies do know it's coming, and they are trying to rework their production operations to adapt to it. Agriculture is hugely trying to make adaptations for a new climate across the northern hemisphere especially. Companies are pulling their manufacturing operations in from the coastal areas at a very fast rate. Quite a few things, and that's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to create a lot of uncertainty. Uncertainty causes prices, values to fall, and all that. You had another part to that? No, not really. The value of the dollar is going to get stronger against other currencies simply because our interest rates are going to start going up very strongly. We'll talk about that next week, or the week after that, I should say, because we are running such insanely large budget deficits. The government has to borrow huge amounts of money. The pressure on the capital markets causes interest rates to rise, and therefore investment businesses have to pay higher costs of capital for their own investments, which pares back the number of investments that they're going to make. So there will be less investment, including investment in people like you to hire. So there you are. Welcome to the dark world. Now, very quickly, volume today was weak compared to volume overall. The volume today was quite weak compared to overall volume over the last 52 weeks. Today, it was about 4.9 million shares of Target traded on an average day over the last 52 weeks, 6.3 million shares traded. So this was a cautious day. Just because bears and bulls were having a fight doesn't mean that it was a big, big volume fight. It was a low volume. We are seeing that. We've been seeing that. I was cautioning students last semester. Over and over again, you saw lower volume on daily trades in stocks than you saw over the 52-week average. That is usually a sign that traders are being cautious in whatever they're doing, bullish or bearish. They're not putting a lot of blood on their hands to shake at the stock. The market cap for Target is $65.406 billion. In other words, if you take that stock price, $67.85, times the number of common stock shares outstanding, that represents the total equity ownership value of the company as determined by the market. This is a $35.4 billion company. Now, very quickly, and you'll see that I do this a lot, I'm going to sneak in sec.gov, and we're going to look at what the accountants say the total equity value of the company is. TGT, coming over here, the K is right here. That's their last annual filing. We'll be doing a lot with these financial statements. Statement, there's some reason I don't consolidate a statement of comprehensive income, financial position. There we go. The accountants say that the value of this company is 11.5 $709 billion. So the market says it's a $35 billion company. The accountants say it's an $11 billion company. Who's right?
The market.
Yes. You get, it doesn't matter what the accountants say. We are you an accounting major?
Yeah.
Ma'am. You'll have a great job. You'll make a lot of money. But we can't rely on you for the market. Because when you're out there on, I told you the story about being on the Serengeti. Okay, you're on the, I told you that story. Okay, you're out there on the Serengeti. And you've got your field guide to animal life on the Serengeti. I told you that one, yeah. You got a wildcat coming at you. And you look at your field guide and it says, oh, this is a nice pussycat. Uses a kitty litter box, eats Friskies. Loves people. And there he is. He's going to eat you. There's no question about it. He's going to eat you, regardless of what the field guide said. You see, in the market cap tells us what the real world is saying about it. Buyers and sellers. Well, all of those people are wrong. Okay. Cat, you're wrong. It's going to eat you. It's going to take you down. You see, that's the problem is. You can tell me whatever you want about the value of this number instead of the market, but at the end of the day, are you going to buy your stock from an accountant in the company, or are you going to buy your stock from some predatory leopard in the market? You're going to buy it from the market, right? So they decide. It's just a matter of who's going to pay, who you're going to pay. So that gives you the perspective on value. We can't care about historical costs. We just can't. This is all, everything in these financial statements is historical cost. History is over. Every price you see has already included history in it. Everything about Target, everything about the world economy that impacts Target is right there in that number, $67.85. You can't go back to a newspaper 3 years ago and read about Target and find anything whatsoever that will give you information about making an investment in the company now. It's already been impounded in the price. It's already there. That stuff was gone. It's already been used. It's already been spent. Beta. Is this an aggressive or a defensive stock? Talk to me. Is this an aggressive or a defensive stock? Look at beta.
Yeah.
Yep.
You said I don't know, so aggressive.
No, it's defensive.
Defensive.
Because yeah. Anything below one means that it is less volatile than the market portfolio, that theoretical, the world's movements. This is, you're in a boat, okay? Now, the boat is going to go up and down with the waves. But you are in a giant boat that doesn't move up and down with each wave. Wait. Will you shut up? Okay, I'm trying to show a point here, okay? You see, did you notice that I'm not going up and down with the waves? That's a beta below one. It doesn't move as much as the market. Now, every now and then, it'll go, okay, but nothing big. Now, here is a boat. You're in this little tiny rowboat, and this, yeehaw! You know, if you had horns on the front of the boat, you'd think you were at a rodeo. That's a beta above one. Real examples for real people. That's what I'm about. Okay, so there you are. This is a less aggressive stock. This would be a stock that you would put into a portfolio for maybe older people. But actually, what kind of a beta guy are you? Talk to me. What kind of investments are you going to make? Are you going to take risks which give you higher expected returns, or are you going to avoid risks but get lower expected returns? What kind of a person are you? So what kind of a beta guy are you? Well, give me a number.
0.75.
Okay, very good. Very good. You would ride about 75% of the market volatility. Your portfolio would. Good. Madam, what are you? What kind of a beta person are you?
0.9.
Wusses. We actually, interestingly enough, there's a myth that it used to be that younger people did form portfolios that were quite aggressive, 1.4, 1.8. We're finding that these new generations like yours are actually surprisingly non-aggressive. They are defensive in their behaviors. As a matter of fact, marketing knows this so well. We sell you excitement and risk, but then we scare you by warning you that if you don't do it our way, you're going to be ostracized. So we actually know that you're very defensive and conservative in your behaviors, but we make you feel like you're really wild and crazy people. It's just the way it is these days. But okay, so what kind of a beta person are you?
I feel like I'd be around the 0.85 or 0.9.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. You, sir, what?
1.1.
Ooh, cowboy. Yeah, okay. So there's that. Now, see that 1 year target estimate on that? That 1 year target? There's an old saying that on the internet, you could be getting information from a cat, okay? And in fact, that's true because my cats actually go on the internet and write finance articles that are completely wrong. One of my cats, I'll show you a picture of him. His name is Phineas. He does it on purpose just to completely blow you away when you try to use his information on my tests. I'm okay with it. I mean, a cat that can use the internet, that's okay. Where am I thinking? So when you see some one-year target, well, in 1 year, this stock will be at $80.13. You take that with a very strong grain of salt. That is someone's projected, some hack somewhere has projected the stock price to be that. Now, give me some logic here. Are you an accounting major?
I am.
Give me some logic. Oh, no. Give me some logic here, sir. If I could actually predict the price of stocks in 1 year, if I could do it, even what's, let's say, 80% accuracy, what's the first question you would ask me standing right here?
Why are you here?
That's right. Exactly. Why would a person who really can do this put it up for all these people? Because he loves himself, the world, and wants to help everyone? I haven't met someone like that in my life. Okay, when I was a teenager, I was so depressed, you know, that teenage depression. I crawled out on this roof right outside of my window on the second floor of my bedroom, and I just cried out, "Why am I here?" And this guy down the street leans out of his window, and he says, "Because you crawled out there, you moron." And then his wife says, "Get back in bed, Harry." And the dog started barking, "Roar, roar, 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 roar." And then he said, "What the hell are you barking at, dog?" What did he expect the dog to say? I heard something. Where was I? Oh. Okay, here's the thing. Let's say that that's a good estimate. That is a good estimate. So the total return, that's a bad marker, bad marker. The total return on an investment, and this is a holding period return, the total return is the capital gain return That's the stock price going up from or down, plus how much you make off the dividend as a percentage of the as a percentage of the stock price. So in other words, in this case, there's a projection that the stock is going to go up from 67.85 to 80.13. So there's a percentage piece in there, right there. Now, here's one of the most important formulas that you will use, and it's an awfully simple formula. The percent change is the ending over the beginning minus 1. This, if you, sir, if you were thinking of getting a tat, you can't go wrong with this one. Seriously. I mean, tasteful, you know, not huge, good color, not green, that's just so, you know, get something like reds and yellows, hinting of shadows in the percent delta. Okay. So the capital gain part here would be the ending price in 1 year. This is a 1 year total return. The capital gain part of it, of the yield of the return, would be 80.13 over 67.85. This is an exact 1 year. If it's not 1 year, we have to make some adjustments with exponents and all that. Nothing horrible. Minus one. And then we add to that the dividend yield, which is the dividend, the dollar dividend divided by the dollar price you paid. You see, if I buy the stock for $67.85, I'm going to get $2.56. I'm going to get it. So it's sort of like the savings account rate on a stock. Now, in this case, they give me the actual result of that, 3.75%, which is, yay, I don't have to do that. For this one, it's nothing really painful. On $80.13 divided by 67.85 minus 1, 18.10%, rounded to 2. So if I times that by 100, whoa, what the heck was that? That was really weird stuff. Times 100, that gives me my percent of that. And then I'll add to that 3.75% dividend, 21.85%. So this analyst is projecting that if you buy target stock today, if you buy target stock today, you will earn a total, your total return will be 21.85%. That is, to put it in professional terms, bullshit. It ain't going to do that. We're in a hurricane bear market. Target is a great company. It's a wonderful company. I enjoy going to Target. Lots of you people go there. They took some heavy risks a couple of years ago. They were heavily criticized for those risks that they took to redo all of their stores, but it's proving to be great. I don't see Target as a bad investment, but 21.85%, that just seems unbelievable, especially for a stock that has a beta of 0.85. That makes me suspicious. At a beta of 8.5, we should expect that it will pull about 85% of the gain of the Dow, of the market portfolio over the next year. And the market portfolio sure as hell ain't going to do 21.85% over the next year. That doesn't mean this couldn't happen. That doesn't mean that. It just means that you have to use judgment. You can't go to the internet to get what you should think. As a matter of fact, in a lot of cases, it will mislead you terribly on what the facts are and what your judgment would tell you is a better idea. The EPS here is strong at 6.03. Now, you got to be careful with Yahoo. Yahoo, and I'm going to show you a much better service, but this is so easy to get to. Yahoo can give you numbers that are wrong sometimes. Just that it's just they don't update the numbers or there's something stuck in the system. Now, this beta is consistent with some other information. However, excuse me. Here's a stock, TSLA. Does anyone know what that is? Tesla. What exchange does Tesla trade on? Come on. NASDAQ, good. Okay. Tesla right now is a love child of Wall Street. A huge amount of money was put in to Tesla by the big dogs on the street. So they're going to try to support the price for as long as they possibly can. Tesla has two divisions. One is excellent, exciting. It's electric engines division. One is an absolute dying dog. It is so low you could play handball on the curb with it. It is so miserable. That's its car division. The cars are gorgeous, but they are just destroying the company with the cash blood outflow from what's going on. Plus, the guy who runs Tesla is he's a few French fries short of a happy meal, which is great in some things, but it's not great in others. And he's ignoring history. The original guy, Tesla. Did you know that electric cars were around right at the beginning, competing right up against the gasoline-powered cars and the diesel-powered cars that Ford was building? And exactly the same reason then that the gasoline-powered engines prevailed is what's going to happen now. We'll see electric engines for electric cars, but they won't dominate the landscape. The internal combustion engines will still be the primary means of moving stuff towards the end of your lives. And it's for the same reason it was back when the original Tesla was up against Ford. Those big, ugly, polluting, hydrocarbon swilling engines can just pull more stuff. They just can, and it'll be a long time before the electric engines can do that. But is there anything in here? See, this beta is incorrect. That's a problem right there. Is there anything in there that really should scare the hell out of you as an investor? Do you see any number that really should bother you? And it's okay if you don't. I'm just trying to get you to start looking. Go. Well, there's that. Yeah, you're going to lose money. The target, the projection is that it's going to drop in price over the next year. Yeah? Oh, my God. Earnings per share. In other words, every share of the stock, the company lost $10.56. That is staggering. Per share loss. That is ridiculous. That is an incredible loss per share. If you know anything about Monty Python movies, that's the Black Knight with both of his arms off yelling, "It's just a flesh wound." That's a lot of blood. And it's all because of that stupid car division. And they won't let go. They just won't let go. But the Wall Street boys are going to keep the price supported because they've put so much money into this dream. Ultimately, the owner of the company, he's either going to drive it into the ground or he's going to do the right thing, and he's going to step aside and let sane people run that division and do something with it. Maybe merge it with Mercedes-Benz or something like that. But unfortunately, we're talking about a person who hasn't shown a lot of, I mean, there's sometimes he's an incredible business person, but as we used to say in the hills of Kentucky, that boy just, that cornbread of his just ain't done in the middle. Dividend policy, they pay no dividend. That's their policy, a zero dividend. So you're just going to have to hope, if you buy this stock, that the stock price goes up because the dividend yield part isn't there. You see, that dividend yield actually is sort of like a safety net. If the stock price goes down or it doesn't go anywhere, at least you got your dividend out of it. This one, you're along for the whole ride with this stock. Another one, AMZN. Amazon. You see the market cap? Near a trillion dollars, one company. Madam, what are you worth? You don't know? Oh my, know thyself. You don't know? Well, actually, you're probably worth, what's your major? Okay, let's talk about a major. Finance, you can't go wrong with finance. Okay, you people are worth maybe between total net present value of future expected cash flows, maybe $6 to $10 million. Somewhere in there. Few of you are worth a lot more than that. God knows I can't see you right now, but I sure wish I got to, I could. Some of you will be worth a little less than that. Some of you considerably. No. but, yeah, in that range. In other words, you are not even a decimal of a percent of the value of that thing. As a matter of fact, Amazon has more value in that one company than putting together most of the people on Earth. That should scare you. We live in a land of things that are, we are nothing but the small earthworms in this world of giants that we call the business environment of the world. Is Amazon a safe or a risky investment? Madam, safe or risky investment? Look at beta. I know. Yes, very good. See, that's one of the things is getting, it takes a while to begin to zero in on these. I do expect that. That's why we're doing this. This is actually a very risky investment. We use words, we don't always say risky. We like to use more diplomatic terminology, like speculative investment. We would say that. I mean, me, I'll say OMFG investment, you know. But most people would say this is a speculative. This is not a responsible stock to have in a portfolio unless you have clear knowledge that you or whomever you are investing for is willing to take that kind of risk. Because, yes, with that kind of risk, look at what that, look at the price could skyrocket. Now, I mentioned it, just snuck it in there, and I'll mention it now, say it more. When you buy stock in round lots. A round lot is 100 shares. If you try to buy stock in an odd lot, you're going to be soaked for extra money from the broker. That's why it's the stupidest thing in the world. I bought a share of stock for my kids. Well, that was the dumbest ass thing you ever did. Just save your money and buy a round lot. Now, so in other words, a round lot of Amazon, without counting commissions, which you will pay, would cost you $168,378, about. Now, I just checked under the seat of my car for the money to buy a round lot. I didn't make it. You see that you could not even invest in this stock. You couldn't. Now, I'll buy a share of it. Good for you. You're going to pay a terribly high commission. It's better if you buy an ETF or a mutual fund that has this stock in it. because then you can buy as much or as little of the ETF or especially the mutual fund as you can afford, and you still get the action on Amazon. But look, okay, Amazon's dividend policy. What is Amazon's dividend policy? Can you tell me that? What's its dividend policy? It pays zero dividend. You say it that way. That it doesn't have. It's not. It doesn't have any. It has a policy, a very deliberate policy of paying a dividend of zero. Amazon would not have no policy. Okay. So now we see that all you are going to get is. If you're going to win, you are going to win purely on the capital gain on this. And whoever is projecting these stock prices is saying, do you see that? That calculator turns off. Why? I had that on the last time I pulled it up, and it turns off. Is it saving battery? No, think about it, noobs. Why would that calculate? That just pisses me off. Oh, sorry. I've never figured that out. Anyway, yes, I'll turn it on again. We'll try it there. Okay, 21 and 2128.16 divided by 60, that's the end, 1 year out, divided by the begin, if you bought it today, 1683.78 minus 1. So they're saying that there's no dividend yield, so I wouldn't add that in. That you ride this stock, they are projecting that you would pull a 26.39% return, which actually, at a beta like that, that high, you're going to magnify the expected return to the market portfolio. So that actually kind of makes sense. I mean, I would hope that I'd get a pretty good return considering how much risk I am taking with this stock. With a beta of 1.83, that's a yee-haw ride. And for that kind of risk, you expect a high return. So there we go. And notice the price-earnings ratio. P-E ratio is another measure of risk. The higher, the more dangerous, because the price-earnings ratio tells us how many dollars investors think that $1 earned for the shareholders today is going to make. So in other words, the price-earnings ratio here says that for every dollar that made it to the point where it belongs to the investors, Amazon is going to turn that into $94.34 for the investors. Now, that's a hellacious amount of money to make off a dollar. So you see, as the price-earnings ratio goes up, it represents more speculativeness. These investors think this company is going to make 94 bucks on every buck that it made for the shareholders. That's a stretch. Now, interestingly enough, back in my time, we considered P.E. ratios above 20 to be very dangerous. But people have gotten so desensitized anymore. I still draw the line at about 30 between a risky and a non-risky P.E. ratio. But heck, you'll see P.E. ratios. There was a famous one back in the 90s. P.E. ratios just went crazy. There was a stock on the Nikkei, the Japanese index, that was 200,000. In other words, investors believe that every dollar that that company made that belonged to the shareholders was going to turn, the company could turn into $200,000 for the shareholders. Needless to say, that company collapsed, crashed, and burned. So be careful. The beta is still the primary measure, but you still look at the P/E ratio. Go.
I was just noticing this on their P/E ratio and Tesla's P/E ratio.
Yeah.
Tesla does not have any P/E
ratio. Yeah, you won't if there's negative earnings. If there's negative price earnings, it's just a price divided by the earnings. So in other words, this 94.34 is 1,683.78 per share divided by 17.85 per share. That's the price-earnings ratio. Literally, it's the price divided by the earnings per share. Price per share divided by the earnings per share. Now, however, if the earnings per share is negative, we don't calculate it. We just say it doesn't exist. It doesn't have any meaning. So this one is not bad. Very quickly here. I think I already showed you this. AMD. See that beta? That is, we have a technical name for that beta. That beta is a stupid beta. That's just insane. A 4.44 beta, that's just beyond belief. American Micro Devices. Now, betas are normally somewhere that zero means it's a no-risk thing, like a government, a short-term government instrument. A one means that this stock moves with the market very well, if it's in a portfolio. Above one is more and more risky. Like this AMD, that's insane. That's after you've taken crack, Molly, and Addy all at the same time and chased it with Jack. Okay, that kind of crazy. Okay, but now there are some things that are negative betas. They're not hugely negative. Gold stocks, there are gold stocks especially that have negative betas. In other words, they move against the market. We call them contra or contrarians because they actually do better when the stock market does worse. Gold, and I'll bring this up again, but you write it down here, flight to quality. From stocks to bonds, from bonds to gold, from gold to bullets. That's the progression downward in an economy. So in other words, in good times, we expose ourselves to the risks of equity investments. When times start to get bad, we sell our stocks and we take stronger positions in bonds, which are safer. If even the bond market looks bad, then we start moving towards commodities, like actual physical products, and also toward metals like gold, platinum, silver, copper. So that's why you'll see gold stocks going up as an economy gets really bad. So that's why their betas can be negative. They run contrary. And of course, if things are so bad that gold doesn't save you, then you sell your gold and buy bullets. We're not there yet, but you know, just kind of keep an eye on what kinds of bullets are being sold on eBay. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.